Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. This is the College Podcast, along with Jim Schoedert and Mike Lanana. I'm John Manuel, bearing some technical difficulties here. We hope you bear with us. We're brought to you by Slugger Nation. That's Louisville Slugger. They're on Instagram and Twitter, at Slugger Nation. And check their fine products out, and they've done a great job sponsoring our college coverage all of the 2015 season. And, guys, this is probably the most tumultuous top 25 rankings of the year. And most of the action to me this week was at the bottom, but I think we should start at the top, where we have a new number one team, and you know we're kind of at this midway point in the season, a lot of midseason awards going around, all those kind of things. But you look at I guess that has to be the number one story of the college baseball season. Really is Texas A&M, guys, and you know Jim, you saw him in person. I think Mike, you haven't seen him in person, but I know you've seen him on the tube.
Yeah,
and it's amazing. This team is 33-3, and I don't care what level you're playing or who you're playing or how you're doing it. Three losses in 36 games is amazing. And Jim, I'm just if you guys both want to just you know touch on what's been most impressive to you for A&M as they go on the go home this weekend, and it wasn't an easy series, but they beat a struggling Mississippi State team 2 out of 3. And 11-2, I guess it is, or 10-2 in the SEC. This team's just
they're 11-3, yeah.
11-3. And it's just it's an incredible run, really, by this A&M team to just keep on being so consistently good and to find so many different ways to win.
Yeah, I think for me, what stood out is I've kind of harped on a couple times these kind of keep waiting for these injuries to their pitching staff with the. Minter and Stubblefield being out, you kind of keep waiting for that to catch up to them, but it just doesn't. I mean, they can hit up and down that lineup. They've been getting, quality starts from Matt Kent, Turner Larkins. I mean, they just keep on rolling, and nothing's, they haven't run into anybody yet that can outlast them in a full 3-game series.
Mike, yeah. What stands out for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think the pitching staff, the injuries on the pitching staff, the fact that they're able to pitch around that, as Jim was talking about, I think that's been huge for them and surprising in some ways, a pleasant surprise, obviously. And then you look at the lineup, and there's a lot of depth in that lineup, a lot of power and balance up and down. I mean, and you look at Nick Banks. I mean, his numbers are ridiculous so far this year, batting .417, slugging .591. It's just a very, very complete team. And, I think 33-3, I mean, that says everything that needs to be said about them.
Yeah, I guess the things that stand out to me is we talked, Jim, I think you've hit on an important point that they had these injuries in the pitching staff, so they did need other people to step forward for them. And it's hard to find another team that has bullpen numbers like they have. And like Ryan Hendricks, I remember him from the draft. He was the 17th round pick of the Indians. The fact that he had 6 strikeouts and 4 scoreless in one of the games this weekend. So, I knew that he was a talent coming into the year. He was on my radar coming in, but they just don't give up any runs in their bullpen. Just the numbers are ridiculous. And I mean, I don't know if there's any other team that's comparable to having a quartet or a quintet, really, of relievers like Hendricks, Simons, Ty Schlottman, Ecker. I mean, it's mind-boggling to see a team that, if you don't get them early, you just don't get them. Their bullpen just doesn't give up anything.
And Mississippi State did get them early in that one. I mean, they got 9 hits off Matt Kent in the Sunday game, and they still, in that case, they just got bludgeoned there by A&M's offense, but I mean, it's just tough to put it all together enough and to actually win a game right now against them.
Yeah, Hendricks, I guess, pitched 6 scoreless over the whole weekend. It's hard to see this team kind of keeping it up. And now they've moved Simons into the starting role this weekend. We'll see how that, if they maintain that. And this team now, I guess the next step, obviously, for A&M is keeping it up. Now that you're number one, baseball, the grind doesn't stop. And they're home against Arkansas this weekend, but in 2 weeks, they will play at LSU. And 3 of their last 4 series in the league are on the road in Southeastern Conference play. I don't know if you guys think anything's going to trip this team up. They have to go to LSU, to Tennessee, and to Ole Miss. I mean, again, when you're that complete of a team, as I think we all agree they are, It's hard to see them being tripped up, but I mean, at some point, most teams don't stay on a 33-3 pace. Do you think there's any danger for this A&M team? They might look ahead past Arkansas to look ahead to that LSU series. I have to think it's going to be tempting because so much looks to be on the line in that series.
Right. I mean, I'm sure there is that temptation there. I don't think they will. I think they'll be fine this weekend. I mean, Arkansas, you can't overlook them either. They've been playing well. I think they'll give Texas A&M a run for their money. But I do think that LSU series is very important for this division. And I think you could even say that the winner of that series has a very good shot of going on to win that the SEC West. And they're playing at Baton Rouge, so it's going to be very loud. It's going to be obviously the SEC kind of environment that we come to expect out of those stadiums. So there's a lot riding on that series, and but I don't think Texas A&M is going to look ahead of Arkansas.
The other thing I want to touch on with A&M guys is when you look at their stats, they're just, I mean, the non-conference schedule was soft. I mean, we've talked about that this year. So their overall numbers are kind of mind-boggling. 42 home runs, the opponents have 7. that's kind of crazy. But in the SEC, and they've only hit 12 home runs in those league games. I guess these stats on SEC website are only updated through Saturday, not through Sunday. But they haven't, they lead the league in hitting, but not in scoring, not by a wide margin, really, in runs. They do lead the league in ERA. I don't know if you're ranking them offensively in the league, I guess it's kind of, again, it's hard to measure. I think LSU has the best offense in the SEC. If Vanderbilt, though, leads the league in scoring, I don't know if you guys think that they, which aspect of A&M's team impresses you more? I mean, I know we're talking about the balance, but is it the offense? Is it the pitching? Or is it the kind of the experienced infield they've had? I know they've had some trouble defensively at third base. If you want to nitpick, which stands out more for you guys? Which side of the ball, I guess, would you say that is the stronger suit for the Aggies?
I mean, I feel like on paper, anyway, I think it does. Well, probably the bullpen, really. But I mean, the offense, even if it is. They haven't lit it up as much in conference play. It kind of reminds me of UCLA in the same kind of vein. But, it's just so deep, and they have so many veteran guys and a lot of physical guys. I mean, I think they can – that's kind of what I'm not too worried about them looking past anybody, even past Arkansas. They're a very blue-collar veteran, that kind of team. They don't seem – likely to fall prey to that kind of thing. So I'll say that just the overall depth in that lineup, aside from the bullpen, I guess.
Yeah, I guess,
I think the fact.
Go ahead.
I think
Mike.
The fact that we have to debate which side of the ball they're better at says a lot about the quality of that team. I think the fact that we can't decide if it's the bullpen or the weekend rotation or the lineup is better, I think says a lot about just where they are right now. I mean, it's just a very, very imposing team.
That's a good way to put it. And, it's neat just to see, first from the guys that I've seen on that team, to have seen Nick Banks last summer with the college national team, and where that, he kind of jumped out among the underclassmen on that team, and then to see him kind of carry that over this year, where he's been quite good in the league, he's been outstanding overall. He seems like he's a pretty good quote. I saw one of the quotes this weekend where he said, and we didn't like the fact that we lost that game and that Mississippi State had to play perfect to beat us. He seems like he's got some talent. He's got some swagger. Not a bad guy to be one of your best players, probably your best player. But that is a fascinating team, and it's amazing to see 33-3. Real quick, guys, the rest of the top of the rankings did change quite a bit. And we had some internal debate over what to do after A&M. A&M 1, LSU 2. UCLA and Louisville, and Mike, I know, well, actually both of you guys, I know both saw some of Louisville this weekend up close and in person. Sounds like, Mike, you were a little bit less impressed with the Cardinals, especially offensively, and there's good reason to not have been impressed. They scored one run apiece in the first two games of that series against Duke. So I guess it was really more a matter of us rewarding UCLA for winning a top 10 showdown with USC than it was kind of that we didn't move Louisville up more than one spot. Is that kind of how you viewed the top of the rankings?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not knocking Louisville at all. I mean, I think they're an excellent team, and I think we did reward them by bumping them up a spot. You know, they are our number four team in the country, but, you know, I have seen both teams this year, and I think you look at UCLA's resume, you know, other than the Dodgertown Classic, which was against three very good teams that they lost, I mean, they really haven't done anything wrong so far this year. And they're a team that has scored a lot, that has excelled on both sides of the ball. I mean, you look at their lineup, they've been able to hit, you know, Kevin Kramer at the top of that group. You look at their weekend rotation, you know, that's solid with Caprillion and Grant Watson, a veteran arm, and then Griffin Cannon come in as a freshman and throwing great. And then you look at the back end of the bullpen, and you got Berg, and you know, he might be one of the best, you know, collegiate closers of all time. So, you know, it's I just look at UCLA and I think it's more a credit to them than it is a knock on Louisville. I just think it's UCLA is a very, very good team. And I was a little concerned watching Louisville and watching them offensively this weekend. You know, you wonder if it was a little bit of a trap game for them, you know, coming off of a weekend series against Virginia and playing Duke, which Duke is a good team, but it's not one of the upper echelon teams in the ACC. So you wonder if any of that came into play. I mean, Andrew Isler did pitch very well. You have to give him some credit too. But, you know, I like both teams a lot. For me, I just like UCLA's resume and just what they do on paper slightly more, very slightly.
I think you won me over kind of in the meeting about that. And I think I was leaning Louisville beforehand, but I think you make a lot of sense about UCLA. It's a dime's worth of difference at this point, and who knows what happens from now on, from here on in. It does look, Jim, I know you're kind of our bracketologist, if I may use that term, but it does look like UCLA and Arizona State both have been so consistent at the top of the Pac-12, have a lot of quality wins. Neither of these teams said that they're falling by the wayside anytime soon. It's rare to see a Pac-12 team with an RPI so high like UCLA's is right now at 3. I think that series win in Orlando against North Carolina really, really is helping UCLA's RPI, and the fact they keep winning freaking games. But Arizona State now at 17 in the RPI, and the fact they won the, you know, they had all the rivalry showdowns in the Pac-12 this weekend. They won 2 out of 3 against Arizona. It seems like Arizona State's playing its way into for sure being a top 8, not a top 8, but being a regional host, as long as they keep taking care of business, and then they have a chance to play their way into being a top 8 national seed. It really seems like those are the only two Pac-12 teams though right now that are sure of anything. USC, I mean, that series loss isn't a terrible hit for USC, but certainly seems like it gives it a little edge to the Sun Devils for now in that race of being that second host out of the Pac-12. What's your take on the Sun Devils, and like, what does USC have to do to kind of play its way back into maybe being a regional host?
Well, I haven't done the bracket for this week. I'll probably get going on that tomorrow. But I mean, the good news for SC is they still get to play Arizona State at home at Dado Field. So that's at the end of the last series of the season. So that.
Right.
That'll be while everyone else is in conference tournaments. So that's kind of be their conference tournament, their last chance to make an impression. But I mean, yeah, ASU's just been really consistent. I mean, they haven't slipped up at all. They had that one, you know, you lose a series at home to TCU, and that's the worst thing you've done. So that's pretty good. I mean, you just look what they've done. I mean, obviously other than taking 2 out of 3 from Oregon State, they haven't played the cream of the Pac-12 prop so far. Let's see, the Oregon State, U of A this week, and then they get UW this upcoming week. Then it does get pretty heavy. The last three of their last four series are Cal, UCLA, and then the Trojans to end the year. So that'll kind of be their chance to make a statement. And I mean, yeah, right now, I mean, I definitely love UCLA as a national seed. I think I'll probably still have all three of those teams as hosts for regionals, I would expect. Just owing on what USC's done, it's just this whole body of work.
I just misread USC, by the way. I thought their RPI was, I wrote it down here in my prep, thought it was 45, it's 15. So even my question was based on a false premise. So, there is that problem. And the other thing I did write down is, you know, that series drew pretty well as well. So, USC. Yeah, it looks like. Yeah, because USC, they could both potentially host in this. I mean, it's obviously the city of L.A. L.A.'s got plenty of fans if you, you know, potentially to come out there. The fact that they've drawn well for college baseball this season, both at Dodger Town and then this weekend series, where you had 2,500 on Saturday night, 1,800 on Friday and Sunday, seems to augur well, actually, for USC. And I know ASU had great crowds as well this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that kind of sticks out to me just with the Trojans, I watched a couple of those games. They kind of had this, the start of the, we can't say that, they have to prove they need to win big games. They've done that with what they did at Dodgertown. But I mean, now it's kind of, back then they were the team that was playing, free and easy. They were they had nothing to lose. Now they've kind of had this shift within a season where they're a favorite now. Usually you see that like from one season to the next, but they've kind of, change their paradigm, if I can say that, to within a season, which you don't really see that much. Now, you're kind of watching that Friday game. I mean, they're going against UCLA, a team that's led by a lot of guys that have been in a lot of big games, and Berg and Caprillion, Kramer, all those guys. They've all been there, done that. And, for the Trojans, it was all kind of new. And I felt like that kind of came out a little bit in that series.
Yeah, I mean, James Caprillion winning that opener, he pitched in Omaha. David Berg, Grant Watts, and all those guys have a lot of. There's a lot of Omaha experience still on that UCLA team, and there's no regional experience with the Trojans. So it is a. I think that makes sense. That's a very plausible argument, and obviously, big series win for the Bruins. The other series of the Pac-12, real quick, that stuck out to me. I don't know if you guys, if it stuck out to you guys at all, but Oregon State losing 2 of 3 to Oregon. It looks like Oregon's season may be too far gone to save, necessarily. Their RPI is up at 115. They're 4-8 in the league. But that was a kind of a chance for the Beavers, who've been on the cusp of the rankings all year, to kind of break in. This was the week, guys. If you wanted to get into the top 25, this was the week. And Oregon State still kind of hasn't been able to take advantage of things. 23-11 overall. Feels like it's still a regional team, but you're still kind of waiting for something to hang your hat on. If you're Oregon State, they lost on the road at Arizona State, lost 2 out of 3 to UCLA. They haven't really played. I guess they've lost 3 straight series now, so it's just not. It feels like a team that's on the cusp, but they haven't quite broken through. Kind of like it feels like the teams that we saw here locally, North Carolina and NC State this weekend. Feels like Oregon State's not that different from its long ago protagonist, North Carolina.
I mean, one of the things that when I talked to Pat Casey a little while ago, early in the season, he kind of pointed out how they didn't really catch any breaks with their schedule, where they get all the other good teams on the road, and they do get USC at home in 2 weeks. So that's kind of, if you're looking for something to hang your hat on, that's really their. Kind of their last best chance if they can win that series, but I mean they're probably going to be right on the bubble.
Yeah, that's where it looks like. I think they are on the bubble for now, guys. Let's switch to the bottom of the rankings again. Like I said, this would have been a great week if you're Oregon State to have broken in. A lot of teams had their chance. We bounced Rice all the way from 14 to out. Felt like Rice. It just feels like Conference USA is a one team in the top 25 league at this point, and we decided that team needs to be Florida Atlantic, and I wholeheartedly endorse that move. Virginia, the Cavaliers, more like Cadavaliers at this time. They're just it's really ugly, and it's startling to see Virginia not be able to adjust, but also just startling to see that they aren't pitching guys and. That's the part. I mean, when you have all that youth, I get it. I understand that they're going to need to you need to be patient with a team like that offensively. But I kind of thought their pitching would pick them up, and it just hasn't. I mean, UVA's just really been, and it was just a brutal week for them with the opening up the week on Monday, getting swept, finishing the sweep at the hands of Louisville. And you think maybe they're getting their offense going with the back-to-back games where they put 14 up against James Madison and Georgia Tech. And then Georgia Tech's pitching is no great shakes. And with a chance to win a series on the road, UVA comes up short 2 games in a row. And Connor Jones gets hammered on Saturday. Guys, that team, I feel like Virginia's in trouble of a regional bid. Am I overreacting on that? I feel like Virginia's...
No.
I don't. Where are the wins going to come from for this team, Mike?
I don't know. I mean, they have... It's not going to get any easier for them because they have Miami coming up this weekend. And then they still have... They're still playing NC State. They're still playing UNC. They're playing Duke, and you can't laugh at Duke. I mean, Duke can beat you. So, you know, I don't know where the wins are going to come from. I think they need to start this weekend against Miami, I think. And, I mean, I feel like this team, you know, I feel like maybe pitching-wise, maybe some of it's mental, you know, knowing that their offense may not score a lot for them. Maybe they're putting a little more pressure on themselves. You know, who knows? You know, maybe they're waiting on Joe McCarthy to come back, hoping he saves the day. And, you know, who knows? You know, by the time he comes back, if he does come back, you know, it might be too late for them. So I think the concerns are real. I mean, for me, it's looking more and more like it's a rebuilding year for them more than anything. It just looks like it's the kind of year, because you look at the depth that they have, and most of their team, the majority of their team are freshmen.
Right.
And they don't have a lot of depth, and they're very thin, and I think they have talented freshmen. I think they're well-positioned for the future, but I don't know if they can make it happen this year. I think they're expecting a pretty quick progression from their freshmen, and I don't think that they're getting it. It certainly doesn't help when you have, you know, your weekend starters, you know, getting beat up, guys that you were going to rely on all year.
Yeah, they're 7-11 in the league in the Atlantic Coast Conference right now.
They would not be in the ACC tournament right now.
And that's
sure.
It. That's what I was just going over today. They're out of the conference tournament right now. That's not a good look to try to impress the committee. And it's to get back into the league tournament. They're going to have to beat a couple teams that are ahead of them on the road. They're going to have to win series, it looks like, at NC State and at North Carolina on the road. And those are doable. I'll tell you, I'm, you know, at the risk of incurring the homer chant, and what I did to the North Carolina NC State series this weekend, so I've seen a lot of both those teams recently. North Carolina, you better get them now, because if that team, Wood Myers was in uniform this weekend, and you look at North Carolina's lineup, and the one thing that you kind of jumps out is they aren't getting any offense out of the middle infield with. And Wood Myers is a middle infielder. So if you get Wood Myers back, you're getting your best hitter before he got hurt. And when he's been healthy, he's been a good college hitter. The last 2 years, he's been banged up a lot. But he's a good offensive player. And their other big problem is the bullpen. Well, Riley Hovis has thrown bullpens. I've talked to the catcher. I talked to Corey Dunbar. He hasn't caught him himself, but he's seen it with his own eyes that Riley Hovis has thrown bullpens and is supposed to be close to coming back from his UCL strain. Those two players would really fix two of North Carolina's biggest ills. And that team's schedule really opens up down the stretch. I think North Carolina has played the toughest part of its schedule. We put the Tar Heels in our top 25 this weekend. It doesn't mean that it's a cakewalk for them. They've got to go on the road twice to Virginia Tech and Notre Dame. They've got BC at home. They've got UVA at home. It feels like North Carolina, especially as they get into regionals, if Hovis and Wood Myers are both back guys, that feels like a dangerous team because Gallen's good. Bukauskas was not at his best this weekend and was still good enough. Trent Thornton is streaky, but clearly has a lot of big game experience. Trevor Kelly's been outstanding out of their bullpen. That seems like a dangerous team to me, especially if they can address those two holes with those two players.
It does feel like they have the most kind of upward momentum of all the kind of this murky middle of the ACC right now. I mean, kind of thought Wake Forest might be that team. They've kind of taken a big step back these last 2 weeks. And Notre Dame, I mean, Notre Dame sweeps Florida State, but they just got done getting swept themselves by Virginia and Louisville, so they're kind of a pinball team right now. But, yeah, I mean, Carolina, they does – I guess we had them ranked in the preseason, so they do – we know they have talent, and they have – you know, it does feel like they're kind of – even in those series they lost, like the Miami series, I mean, they outplayed Miami for most of that series. They just kind of – their bullpen let them down. But maybe the Clemson series loss is a bit of a head-scratcher, but – other than that, I mean, they feel like they've got the most positive momentum.
Yeah, that's how I feel, Mike. I don't know. You saw the Tar Heels a lot lately. What would you do? You think they'd have a chance to? Do they still seem like the team that has the highest ceiling of that muddled middle of the ACC?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I mean, I liked UNC's team since, I mean, before this season started. I mean, I think of those teams in the middle of the ACC, I think they do have the most upside. And I think you hit the nail on the head as far as getting Wood Myers back and Riley Hovis, if he comes back, I think that would be a big shot in the arm for them. You know, I look at the rotation. I think Zach Gallen has really taken a huge step forward this year. I mean, you know, pitching the nine inning complete game, just zero earned runs, is one unearned run in that game against State. And he pitched excellent against Miami as well, which is, as we all know, a very high powered offense. And JP Bukauskas has the stuff to be an ace, to be a Friday starter. And, you know, you can't sneeze at Ben Moss either, though he's, the last couple outings haven't been great for him. He has experience as well. And, you know, can step up in big games. So I like their rotation. I do think that they do need, you know, a little more consistency in the lineup. I think Sky Bolt might be heating up a little bit now. I think Tyler Ramirez might be heating up a little bit as well. He went through a really tough stretch there for a while where he was struggling. But the key for them for sure is their bullpen. And if they can find another guy besides Trevor Kelly who can actually throw some innings and
I'm not sure they need anyone else, actually.
Yeah, well, you know, I feel like I don't know how much longer his arm can last. I mean, he's got a lot of mileage on it this year. 45 and two-thirds innings, 26 appearances, and, you know, 36 games, which, you know, that's a lot. That's a lot. But, who knows how long he can pitch Saturday night if that game kept going in extra innings. I asked Mike Fox about it, and he said, well, you know, good thing is I don't have to answer that. So,
yeah, but right now Trevor Kelly is East Coast David Berg. I mean, he's not as accomplished as David Berg, but the low slot, everyday kind of guy, that's who he's become right now. And obviously we have to give Notre Dame its due. I mean, they swept Florida State. Pretty amazing. I'm still trying to find out if Zach Katsoulis, their first baseman, if he's Greek or if he's Lithuanian. That's a question for another show. If Zach's listening or any Notre Dame players are, hit me up on Twitter at JohnManuelBA. I've got a question for Zach. But this is a team, guys, that right now it seems like Notre Dame's kind of doing it with its bullpen as well. You know, you look up and down Notre Dame's roster, there's some famous names there with Biggio and Lidge, you know, who have relatives with big league names. But to me, nothing really jumps off the page when I look at the numbers or I look at the reports on Notre Dame. What does stand out is of late, they've found some answers in their bullpen. They've pitched well, and they're really competing. It's kind of like it's what Mick Aoki's better teams at Boston College did. And it's a pretty big turnaround for a team that was pretty I can't believe I'm going to use a Josh Norris word here. They were pretty oinky last year, and they've been much more competitive this year. Even when they were getting swept in some of those series, they still seem like they were competitive against Louisville. And I know that Notre Dame did not expect to sweep Florida State this weekend, but when they had a chance to do it, they finished off a series sweep. I was pretty impressed with that. I don't know if you guys had any takeaway from that series for either team, for the Irish or for the Seminoles.
Yeah, I mean, I think Notre Dame's pitching is kind of the takeaway. I mean, sounds like that's their strength. I mean, obviously they've got Biggio. They do have some guys you can, you know, to get excited about in the offense. But it more sounds like it's more they're more of a pitching team. And, you know, and also sweeping Florida State, I mean, that doesn't happen often, if ever. Probably once every few years that they get swept in a conference series. So, I mean, certainly Notre Dame's been strong in the RPI all year, kind of because they've played so many road games. But, so, I mean, they're kind of, we had them in regionals and out when they get swept twice in a row. They're 3-9, but now they're back to 500. So they'll probably be back on the good side again.
Yeah, and they only had five walks all weekend against Florida State. So that's two weekends in a row that Florida State, you know, which 2 weeks ago was leading the country in walks by a wide margin. I just remember doing my prep for the NC State series. That, you know, Florida State had a 427. Average, on base percentage as a team, which was just crazy to think about having that high of an on base percentage as a team. And you know, the last two weekends, you know, they were able to survive it against NC State. They still won a couple of games in that series despite the fact that they didn't walk a lot. That NC State really attacked them. Their pitchers threw a lot of strikes. But, you know, they don't lead the country in on-base percentage anymore. Far from it. And they're all the way down at 10. Their OBP has dropped 25 spots, 25 points in the last 2 weeks. So it seems like that reports out, you know, make them beat you in the strike zone. And outside of DJ Stewart, there's really not a bat in that Florida State lineup that really scares you. Sansone and Delph, you know, those guys are solid. Neport and Marcancini are okay, but Marcancini especially really hasn't. This guy hit double-digit home runs the last couple of years at Duke and really hasn't hit for much power at all for Florida State. My takeaway is I'm a little bit concerned for Florida State that the last 2 weekends, their offense has really fallen off. And, you know, this series sweep is not going to – like you said, it doesn't crush them in RPI because Notre Dame's RPI has been so good, but the schedule does soften up a little bit for them, but they in the next week or so. But they do have to go to Miami later and to Louisville. I'm not sure that is a recipe for Florida State being a top eight national seed. I think that's kind of out the window now, Jim, isn't it? After they
pretty much, yeah, they'd definitely be. Louisville and Miami are definitely solidly ahead of them right now for the ACC. I mean, if they can come back and if they can win that Miami series, then maybe only we can revisit it with them. But for now, I mean, it's FSU. I mean, it's Miami or Louisville or, you know, or bust for the ACC as far as getting national seeds.
Well, we did not rank despite the sweep, we did not rank the Fighting Irish this week. We did rank North Carolina. We brought them in at number 23. We also brought in College of Charleston and say hello again to Texas Tech. Tumultuous week in the Big 12, guys, as we re-rank the Red Raiders in the same week, I believe, that we had the Tech Hecklers as our fan base of the week. If you have a nomination for the fan base of the week, by the way, bother Jim on Twitter. He's at Jim Schoner, BA. We considered so many other teams, guys. We considered University of San Diego. We considered UNC Wilmington. Nevada, boy, great week to go lose 2 out of 3 at Fresno State. Nevada, you know, Nevada yes. Hadn't lost a series all year. They won 8 straight. And the 1 week that it really opens up for them, they go and lose on the road. Oklahoma wins a series on the road at Texas, but not a good look to rank a team when you lose 24-2 in midweek, as they did to their rivals, Oklahoma State. Just quite a muddle there, guys. I guess UC Irvine was kind of the other team we talked about ranking, but Nebraska. What stood out for you guys? What stood out for us on bringing in College of Charleston and the Texas Tech Red Raiders?
For CFC, they've been so consistent. I mean, they lost that series to South Carolina to start the year, which is a huge knock on them now. But yeah, I mean, they've been really consistent. I think they've won all four of their league series. I think they've won like 5 series in a row overall. They've got a stud at the top of their rotation in Taylor Clark, and they've weathered the injury to Bailey Ober really well. So I mean, that's just been a very very consistent team all year. And for the Red Raiders, I mean. You know, they sweep Baylor, which you should sweep Baylor. So they're kind of, you know, they're back in the tie for third in the Big 12. So it's kind of, you know, I do like their talent still. I still believe in what they can, but I still think they would be a dangerous, like a dangerous 2 seed if they're in your regional. But, yeah, I mean, it's more just kind of, I mean, they've got talent and they kind of, maybe they're starting to put it together. We'll see if they can, sustain it a little bit.
The Big 12, I think we all thought this would be a little bit stronger league than it has been. I think we thought that there was a very very strong top four in this league. And said, you really don't have that. You really have Oklahoma State and TCU.
It's been two.
And, yeah. You know, TCU lost a series this weekend. They're certainly allowed. They're allowed a stumble here or there. But, I mean, the alarm bells have to be sounding in Austin. They're, you know, they're 4-9 against the top 50. They're barely above 500 overall. Texas Tech, like you said, is kind of, you know, their RPI is not that hot. Oklahoma's RPI is not that hot. Jim, I mean, you know, is this how many bids is this league looking at? And should we start talking about West Virginia, I suppose, is one of these? Like, once again, Randy Mazey doing a really nice job. He's not just a guy who rails about the weather. He actually knows how to coach baseball. And this team, you know, they're one of these other teams, Jim, that plays a lot on the road, won a series at Clemson to start the year, and that's it. That's helping their RPI, isn't it?
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, right now, West Virginia, they have zero top 50 wins, so that's kind of a problem. But I mean, maybe if Clemson gets back in the top 50, though, they're not exactly close right now. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of looking at theirs. I mean, they still thing with West Virginia is that their last three series are TCU, Oklahoma State, and Texas Tech. So I mean, if they finish strong, they would get in for sure. But I mean, it's you put kind of bet against that right now. But I mean, yeah, I mean the Big 12, it's a mess. All these power conferences are a mess, really.
they really are. They are. You're right. All these power conferences are extremely top heavy, and that seems to be the power conference this year. We've talked about it all year on the podcast, guys. The funnest conference to follow is the Big Ten. I mean,
yes, it is.
That league is really that's a fun league, and that must have been why I wanted to bring
find good teams and middle teams and bottom teams.
I'm taking credit for that's why I wanted to bring Nebraska into the rankings this week. Why did we not bring them into the rankings? What was the problem? I guess because Nebraska, when they've played other good teams this year, they really haven't won those games. That seems to be the best explanation.
Yeah, I mean, they are just five, and they did get swept by Maryland last week, which I was going to, you know, I'm going to stick up for the Terps.
That's a badge of honor for them, Jim.
But, you know, I mean, with Nebraska, I'm trying to pull up. Also, we do like Nebraska's talent. They were red hot before. They had that one bad weekend against the mighty Terps. But I mean, maybe if they had swept Minnesota, not get shut out in that game they lost, but you know, get shut out at home. But
that's a league that's deep. That's a league that's what we're talking about here. The rest of the leagues are so top heavy. That's a league that's deep, and we've got Illinois. We're 12 now in our rankings. Iowa, Maryland. So we do have three teams ranked. It feels like Ohio State, Michigan, Indiana all have claims to fame. Michigan State, didn't Michigan State have a big series when they swept the Oregon? I guess that's not exactly as big a series win as I thought it was. But at the time, it sure seemed big. I feel like Ohio State, I know, was a team that was on my kind of internal radar. I know that part of their Big Ten record is a little fattened up. They've already played Rutgers, and they've played Penn State, two of the bottom feeders in the league.
Yeah, their schedule's really backloaded. So
it is. Nope. They've got to go to Nebraska still. They've got Maryland still. They've got Illinois still. And they've got to go to Indiana. So, you know, Ohio State has a pretty gaudy record. Not the best RPI in that league. But that league's overall, the teams in that league have pretty robust RPIs, guys. I mean, Illinois, Nebraska, all these, Iowa, a lot of these teams are really high in the RPI. And Mike, it sounds like, I mean, you know, Hudson Belinsky was up at Iowa this weekend. Sounds like Iowa's legit. You go on the road and win a series at Maryland. That was about as impressive a series win as on the road that any team in the top 25 had this week, wasn't it?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, and the thing about it is they got hit in the mouth in the first game, losing 10-1, and you know that was after losing to Wisconsin Milwaukee earlier in the week, who we talked a little bit about in our meeting this morning.
Mighty Milwaukee.
Yeah, they've had a nice year, but to come back the next 2 days and to get the pitching outings that they got, I mean, holding Maryland to one run each of those two games. I mean, they're a team that's certainly legit, a team that's surging right now, and you know, they're setting all kind of program records with the kind of season that they're having so far and being in our top 25. So I think they're certainly legit. I think they're certainly a threat in that conference. And, you know, I'm sure if you asked Maryland and asked the Terrapins, they would agree.
I'll tell you, you mentioned, I'm going to go way off the board here. You mentioned Wisconsin, Milwaukee. That is a fascinating team to me. Just because this is a team that it sounds like is extremely offensive, and I mean that in a positive way, obviously, not like I'm offended by Wisconsin, Milwaukee. They really score a lot of runs, guys. And what was the stat that Hudson had in our meeting that they've got something? They have some crazy amount of their 11 losses. The majority of them are by one run.
Like 8-1 run losses or something like that. Something like
I think like 8 out of 11 of their losses, I think, are one run.
I think that was it. You know, and they swept the series at Missouri. This is one of the very few teams that is above 500 comfortably in SEC play. Yeah, they had a four-game losing streak at Wright State and Oakland, and all four of those were one-run losses. They're talking about Wisconsin-Milwaukee here. And they lost a series this weekend at home to Illinois-Chicago. So it's not exactly a regional resume. But it's just fascinating to have that Wisconsin-Milwaukee team. That is the one series of the year I can't – there are two series I can't figure out all year. Wisconsin-Milwaukee sweeping Missouri as well as Missouri's playing, especially when you look at Missouri's pitching. They've got power arms. They've got off-speed because McLean's like a touch-and-feel guy. Hauk has got power. They've got they come at you with a lot of different arms, and Milwaukee just kind of took it to them all weekend. Obviously, it was early. And then that Arkansas State-Louisville series is the other one. Louisville's lost one series all year, and it's to 14-20 Arkansas State, which I just can't predict I guess, is the hashtag, right?
Yeah, I kind of asked, when the Louisville people here, I kind of asked them, what was the deal with that series? And you just kind of, it's just one of those, everything that could go wrong did. It's just one of the, you just had a bad weekend, and Arkansas State played with a lot more energy than they did, and they just got beat.
That is that is baseball, I suppose, is the way that you're supposed to just look at that one. It's an unusual the unusual can happen, guys.
Yeah, it was a crazy travel and weather situation and all that deal in there.
That's right. That was one of those series that got played at Lake Point down in Georgia. They did not play that. Yeah. They moved that series. So every team it seems like has had that. And so to this point, I feel like we have fewer definitives in the average in the season to this point than we usually do, guys. So I think that's why one of the reasons why we have some of these unexpected teams in the back of the top 25. We've had a lot of movement in the top 25 this year. I expect that to be the case and to continue. What's there to look forward to this week, guys? Is there anything on your radar, Jim or Mike, games that you'll be going to soon? And also what's online? What's coming at baseballamerica.com and Three Strikes? What can our listeners look forward to online this week?
Well, I'll be heading up to D.C. to catch the Terps against Fullerton. Can't miss a chance to see the Titans when they come east, even though they're not having the year we expected. I still can't pass on that. And
Jim, just remind me, I got to get you some issues for those guys to sign. We won cover of the month for February in the company.
Exactly. And when's our pizza party? But
I got to schedule that pizza party. You're right.
So I'll be up there. And for Three Strikes, I'll have a piece on Carson Cross from UConn and hoping to catch up with J.J. Schwartz from Florida. And I think Mike will have something on some of the Louisville guys.
Yeah, well, Kyle Funkhauser was outstanding on Friday night.
And he pitched really, well as well.
What's that?
And he pitched well, too. I mean, he was a good interview, was he not?
Yeah, he was. And, it was for me, it was an eye-opening performance. I mean, he only walked one guy, which walks has been a knock on him in the past. And I asked him about it afterward, and he said he just thought more than anything it was just a mental lapse. He got the first out in the inning and then just kind of took a breather for a second and walked the guy, and he was mad at himself after that for doing it. But he was – the last two pitches he threw in the game were 97 miles per hour. He touched 98 at one point earlier in the game on the corner. He was commanding the ball down to both sides of the plate. His slider, no one could touch it. Started mixing in his curve later on. He was commanding his two-seamer. He was kind of using it as a changeup. It was about 88, 89, and he was getting hitters to roll over on it and swing through it. So he was filthy, and he brought the funk all night long. And him and his catcher Will Smith, just getting jiggy with it. And it was just a sight to behold. So I'll be writing about that for Three Strikes. And then
please use every single one of those bad puns that you just used in Three Strikes, please.
I'll do what I can. But as far as this weekend, there's not a lot going on in this area that I'm all that excited about. But I think a couple series that I've circled to keep an eye on: Vanderbilt at South Carolina. I think this is do or die for South Carolina at this point. I think they need to do something this weekend, and obviously playing Vanderbilt is going to be a tough test for them. So, interested to see how they respond to that challenge. Miami at Virginia.
They didn't respond well this weekend, Virginia's Mike. They got pounded. I don't mean to interrupt you, but South Carolina got annihilated by Florida. I mean, I cannot remember a South Carolina team being that non-competitive. I just was reading on Twitter before we got on here. I guess Chad Holbrook had some, whether it was comments today on his coach's show or what, but he took it on himself, and you know, that's what coaches are supposed to do. They're the leaders, but he doesn't have to take it on himself. All the fans in that fan base have already put it on him. So,
yeah,
it's not fun times for that program, and that is, it's getting ugly over there. I mean, I don't know if that season can be salvaged for South Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, it might be too late for them. Just like Virginia, you know, it might be too late for them at this point. You know, I think they need to really upset Vanderbilt this weekend to, you know, for RPI purposes and for their own psyche at this point. I mean, Will Crow and Jack Winecoop are two guys that, you know, you think you could lean on. And just like Virginia, where, you know, we had Kirby and Jones and what else struggling a bit. I mean, Will Crow's gotten destroyed the past couple outings.
Yeah. So. He's been the rock for them. And instead the last 2 weeks, he just hasn't had it. Hasn't been there for him at all. Yeah, he has been. That's kind of a setup. E2 easy. It's a layup for Mike Lanana. So, as usual, your Vine game was strong. I guess, I still don't know how to use, I don't know how to, Periscope does not archive, does it, guys?
You can save it to your phone. You can save it to your camera roll, but I don't, beyond that, it doesn't archive on the app itself.
Yeah, so I apologize for missing your Kyle Funkhauser Periscope interview, but I'm looking forward to more of that. I'm looking forward to you trying that this weekend, Jim. With you need to just have an interview with John Scheff, the coach at Maryland, just you know, about your Terp fandom, because I'm sure that it was not. I'm sure that was never the case in basketball, but your Terp baseball fandom is strong. They won you over last year. I'm thinking of it because they clearly won you over last year and dazzled you in Columbia by winning that regional. And
exactly.
So now
I think he's aware when I talked to him in for our earlier this year. I think he knows I'm in their corner. So
I like it. I like that you are. And it's funny. I never would have pegged you as for being in the Maryland camp after all their years in the Atlantic Coast Conference. But like you said, Mike, there's not a lot going on this weekend, so I'm glad that Jimmer's going up to not in our neck of the woods. So I'm glad that Jimmer's going up to the D.C. area. That'll be a good series. I definitely want to see a Periscoped video of. We need to email Thomas Eshelman and Justin Garza and remind them to bring their bring the wigs and bring the fake mustache for a Periscope interview this week. But if you aren't aware of what we're talking about, you've got to be following Mike on Twitter at MLanana. If you want to be informed about college baseball, you got to follow Mike. You got to follow Jim Schoner, at Jim Schoner BA. If you want bad puns, you have to follow Mike as well. But or good puns.
I think they're great, John. I think they're all great.
When you and Turner Walston over at UNC get into some of the deep cuts, that's where the creativity really starts coming out. I'm very impressed when you guys go 10 and 12 tweets deep with puns.
Yeah,
you guys are reaching deep, so it's there's a lot of depth there. You guys are like you're like Texas A&M, you're the Texas A&M of punsters. So I'm impressed, but impressed with the Aggies, impressed with the tweet and Vine game, and I hope you were impressed with the podcast, guys. Thanks for listening, and of course thanks to Louisville Slugger for sponsoring our college baseball content. Please check them out on Instagram at Slugger Nation or on Twitter at Slugger Nation. So for Jim and for Mike, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you on the next Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.